How do we calm the fearful brain? As we know, trauma can keep patients stuck long after the tragic event. Here, Dr. Bessel van der Kolk sheds a light on the unique factors that keep traumatized patients stuck.
Yeah, you know, I consider myself a neuroscientist and a brain person. And so, you know, we've learned so much from neuroimaging and quantitative EEGs that I see it very much, and you can see it in the brain. So you see different areas of the brain that do not come online. You see that the focusing capacity of the brain doesn't work. You see that the filtering system of the brain doesn't work. And you also get to see how what you're dealing with are very difficult issues. So anybody who says, oh, just do that and everything's going to be cool, you know, you see very dramatic brain changes in chronic trauma where large parts of the capacity to sense oneself gets damaged, and so you no longer know what you feel. Parts of the brain that have to do with knowing who you are get damaged, so you have no narrative for self. This is what who I am, and this is what it stands for. And it's awesome when you see these, you know, these brain images. But trauma affects the brain and causes serious damage. And so people, most traumatized people do get stuck. And they get stuck in a position of being unable to know what they know and feel what they feel, because the brain areas that have to do with feeling and knowing get so damaged. And so over the years, you know, I also started off as a psychotherapist only, and then a psychopharmacologist. It increasingly became clear that there is enough brain damage. You need to do something to really start reorganizing these brain patterns that really keep people stuck on a frozen past. And so the big issue here for me is neurofeedback, is that applied neuroscience. And when we see what is damaged in the brain, we can actually play computer games with people's own brains and help to begin to reset those changes. I still hear a number of my psychological colleagues say, oh, my method can solve all these things. I say, well, you better prove that, because damage is so profound.
Yeah.
You know, we do studies, but I can also tell you from a clinical practice that people may be agitated, unable to relate to people, and then one videotape of a patient might show, and she says, you know, I feel attached to people now. When you're not afraid, you can relate to people differently. As long as your brain is geared to being scared that somebody's going to hurt you, you're always on the defensive. But once you feel safe inside, you can approach people differently. And she says, before I did neurofeedback, I was always looking around who was going to hurt me. And I knew consciously that nobody was going to hurt me, but my whole system was set to experience danger. And so when people's system is set to experience danger, they are always agitated, frantic, and then they start doing things to calm themselves down. And so they dissociate, they take drugs, they numb themselves out with video games. And so many of some global behaviors can be understood as ways for which people, that people use in order to deal with that hyperactive alarm system. So you calm the fear system down, and then people can talk with you. I have a great example. Our director of training, we do neurofeedback together, train ourselves, experiment. Third day that we're doing this in a group of people, he says, I have to stop. No, interesting thing happened to me. Well, most of you don't know much about my own personal history, but you know, you don't probably know me as a little bit of an uptight guy. And I've done every therapy in the book, and he's a wonderful therapist. He says, but I'm always in the alert. I'm always a little scared. I'm always a little fearful of other human beings, and I don't take pleasure in being with other people. And it's gone. I trained myself to FBO2, the part of your brain that sort of sends signals to your amygdala, become calmer, and I look at people differently. And that was about 7 years ago. And since that time, our friendship has blossomed because he's much more open. He's much more spontaneous. He argued. If I do something I don't like, he says, hey, I didn't like that. Before, he would say, just sit with being happy with something.
That's a really amazing story. Bessel, how many sessions had he had?
That's just 3 sessions. So it's very unpredictable. So right now, the research we do right now is on horrendously damaged kids who have been, I don't even want to say the trauma, they're so bad. But, you know, a typical school class, people have seen their mom being murdered. They have seen their dad being shot in drug deals and got hauled off to jail. They have been raped, they have been abused, they have been fostered. Their brains are all over the place. These kids have clearly developmental trauma disorder, which we talked about before, and they get all these stupid diagnoses that totally don't capture what's going on with them. And they usually get very heavily drugged and hence become unable to learn, unable to function. So we do neurofeedback with it. And you start being able to just, the main thing is they start engaging with people. And so, like, therapists are all into the relationship, and that the relationship will cure. But, you know, when you have a fear-driven brain, people terrify you. I don't know if you've talked to Ruth, but Ruth and Paul Fuhr did this amazing piece of research. They show a handsome, dark-eyed stranger to a bunch of
You're talking about Ruth Lanius?
Yeah. And the back of their brain, the periaqueductal gray lights up. So a lovely, kind-looking person like you may become a traumatic trigger for them. And so you may say, oh, that must hurt. Oh, I'd be here for you. And that's what they heard when they were being seduced. So anybody who's nice to them automatically becomes a trigger. And that very deep, what they call the cockroach part of the brain, lights up when you look at the brain scan.
As Bessel said, we can help our clients get unstuck once we're able to reach that fearful part of the brain. Now, I just want to go back to something Bessel said earlier about traumatized patients losing connection to their feelings. Dr. Joan Borsenko and Bill O'Hanlon had some interesting thoughts on this idea.
I have a really simple idea that's based on great research. There's a guy named James Pennebaker, who was at the University of Texas, I think at Austin, and then he's moved since then. But he started doing an experiment. It's a very simple experiment. He had people who were traumatized write for 15 minutes a day for 3 or 4 days, write without any, you know, it's just like free writing. They call it sometimes, Julia Cameron calls it free writing. You don't lift your pen from the page. You just write. Don't censor. Don't worry about grammar or anything like that. And in a private place, so no one will see it. So you don't censor yourself or worry about someone seeing it. Do it for 3 or 4 days. At the end of that time, he found that people were way less traumatized and their insight into what they were feeling happened. They got some insight into what they're feeling, and that the story had changed and the pronouns had changed. Really interesting. He went on to write another book called The Secret Life of Pronouns based on his noticing when they did the research on this writing that the pronouns for people shifted. So very simple ritual, a writing ritual, and you can find out about this in the book, Writing Yourself Open. It's a powerful stuff. That research has been replicated about 1,000 times because you can do it within a semester and graduate students can get out of their dissertation a lot quicker because it's pretty quick research to do. It's only 3 or 4 days, then you do the analysis afterwards. And they've done it with rape victims. They've done it with people who are car accidents, people who have postpartum depression. Interesting stuff. Very simple technique, the writing ritual.
A number of years ago, when I used to work with Herb Benson, we were studying meditation, we were studying the relaxation response, we were studying how to calm people down. I went off to a week-long workshop with this really interesting German guy whose name was Wolfgang Luther, and he was a physician who used something called autogenic training. Some of you will remember, it's like, you relax and you start with a series of formulas. My right arm is heavy. My left arm is heavy. Both arms are heavy. You do it with your legs. There are like 6 different standard formulas. And there's a huge volume of research that, in fact, I think several volumes of research that Luther wrote with the actual founder of autogenic training, whose name I have unfortunately long since forgotten. But what he found is as you get deeper and deeper, you calm down the conscious mind, the knowing mind, the thinking mind. Old trauma comes up, and it comes up in a symbolic way, and the autonomic nervous system gets triggered and different things happen. And then he invites people to actually do art. And this he calls this autogenic abreaction and art therapy. And it was quite amazing to watch in the workshop the kinds of breakthroughs that came through, because this was entirely nonverbal. And what you could see in people was tremendous differences in what was going on in their autonomic nervous system. It was almost like a Peter Levine kind of thing, where you saw the whole body and body language shifting. And so it came, again, from very, very, very deep changes. And the whole movement of biofeedback, in a way, came out of that. People like Elmer Green said, there's got to be a faster way. It takes like a year or something to become an expert in autogenic training. And now neurofeedback is kind of the leading edge of taking something like that so that you can make what is implicit explicit in a system that doesn't necessarily have words to it, but abreaction.
Joan mentioned autogenic training and Dr. Elmer Green. Elmer was a pioneer who integrated autogenic training with his biofeedback work at the Menninger Clinic. He would use imagery to help patients self-regulate their body temperature and other involuntary functions. In the next video, we'll learn how to install positive neural circuitry in the brain.